Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Why don't we start that NFL weekly recap with the obvious? Not only did Philadelphia not beat Dallas like their head coach Doug Peterson said they would, they end up getting hammered. That was a straight hospital job in prime time, under the lights for everybody to see. Not only did the Eagles get hammered, they didn't bother to even show up. Not me talking junk, not my words, but those of their own quarterback, Carson Wentz.
We didn't show up. We didn't show up. They beat the crap out of us.
I respect that. Not their effort, not their performance, but that he owned it. We didn't show up. They beat the crap out of us. Yes and yes.
We didn't show up. We didn't show up. They beat the crap out of us.
That's a good quote by an NFL quarterback. Yes and yes. You did not show up, and they did beat the crap out of you. Look, Doug Peterson is a damn good coach, and I've got no problem with head coaches calling their shot. In fact, I wish more would. Unless they call their shot, then they go out, and they don't show up, and they get the crap beat out of them. That was an all-time bad look. Such a bad look, and so much so, that Peterson was asked if that was their worst loss since he took over there.
Is this the worst loss since you've been here?
It's either one or two, yes.
Let me help you there, Doug. Yes, it's one. Yes, that was your worst loss since taking over. So where does that leave us? Is Philadelphia that bad, or the Cowboys that good? Man, you talk about team schizo. Who are the Cowboys, really? I mean, are they the team that just bludgeoned into Philly, or are they the slugs that were sleepwalking against the Jets? Again, are the Eagles that bad? Because their defense definitely is. Everybody knew how badly the Eagles secondary was playing coming into that game, but they also had no way of stopping the run. No way of stopping the run, and then no way of stopping the Cowboys from running their mouths. Ezekiel Elliott had this to say after the game, quote, "We don't need inspiration from him to go out there and play hard. This rivalry is enough. Honestly, we don't give a bleep what Doug Peterson says." End of quote. That was Ezekiel Elliott. This is Amari Cooper.
Man, if I can ball out in the same game that Zeke balls out in, we'll never lose.
Well, that's a hell of a statement, isn't it? A hell of a statement when you consider where they were only a few weeks back. A hell of a statement when you consider where they were only a week back. I mean, you want to talk about a complete reversal from a team that had dropped three straight, including one to the Jets. And now they're talking about junk, about how they may never lose again. And you know what? The way they're playing, or the way they played last night, maybe they won't. I mean, that really was a completely different Cowboys team last night. The Ginger Clapper should probably give himself a big hand for his team's effort last night, because again, they look like a completely different Cowboys team. But if you want to jump in, we could talk about it. Are the Eagles that bad, or are the Cowboys that good? This breaking bit of news, this just in, allow me to jump into this regularly scheduled recap to bring you news of Andy Dalton of the Cincinnati Bengals and the Bengals. Now, I have not talked a lot of Bengal football on the show this year. Reason for that, they're terrible. But Andy Dalton did something amazing yesterday. Amazing. And I'll be damned if I don't give him some love for it. Incredibly, Cincinnati was within a touchdown of Jacksonville in the fourth quarter. And they were in the red zone, looking to tie the game, looking to shock the Jags. Unfortunately, Andy Dalton had other plans.
Dalton is back to throw. Cox the arm, throws. Oh. Intercepted by Miles Jack. He's running it back at the 20. Still has the ball, hands it backward to a teammate. Penalty flag down. That teammate running up the field. And he is tightroping the sideline before being pushed out.
Very disappointed Bengals radio crew. All right, so look, that's not a great pass. But that'll happen. Especially to Dalton. That'll happen to him, actually pretty frequently. But the Bengals defense is there to pick him up and force a punt. The Bengals offense comes back out. Incomplete pass, defensive PI, pass for no gain, and then this.
Dalton in a shotgun, two receivers to either side. He's off the throw against a four-man rush. It's going to be a screen, and it is picked off by Yannick Ngakoue to the 10, to the 5, touchdown, pick 6. Yannick Ngakoue extends the lead for Jacksonville.
To the Jags defense. The old screen pass to the Jags defense. Just how they drew it up. That's why you bring in a young offensive stud to be a head coach. To dial up brilliant schemes like that. You know the old saying, right? You know how sometimes you hear people say, that dump off is the same as a handoff? That screen pass is the same as a handoff? That's when people say that. That screen was the same as a handoff. Like Dalton was just handing the ball to the opposition and letting them score. That was not only my favorite play of the NFL weekend, that was my favorite play of the NFL season to date. But again, mistakes like that can happen. I mean, they can't happen, but they do. And you got to bounce back, right? You have to have a short memory, especially in that league, at that position. What I'm saying is, if you fall off that horse, you get your ass right back on. And if you throw two interceptions in four passes, man, you keep throwing it. You shoot your shot. One play later, you guessed it.
Andy Dalton is ready for the shotgun snap, catches the ball. He is back to throw, flings it over the middle. It is intercepted again. Running it back to the 50, down to the Bengals 40, and the Bengals will bring down Ronnie Harrison after Jacksonville's third interception in the fourth quarter.
Wow, man.
I love analyst guy. Analyst guy keeps going, oh!
Flings it over the middle. It is intercepted again.
Actually, he tagged that. Oh, with a goodness.
Goodness.
That's so good.
Wow, man.
Wow, man. Oh, goodness. I mean, actually, that's whoever that is, that takes incredible restraint. You have to sit there and watch that. Three interceptions in five plays? Three interceptions in five plays in a game that was there for them. Legend. GOAT. I have not seen that kind of excellence in the art of throwing INTs since Matt Schaub was handing out pick sixes like Christmas gifts. Remember that? At this point, Andy Dalton is in the running not only as my favorite NFL player, not only as my favorite athlete, maybe ever, but maybe my favorite human being ever. Three picks in five plays is not easy to do, and my man just executed it flawlessly. What I'm saying is, this is a quarterback league. Either you have one or you don't. It's that simple, and it's pretty clear the Bengals don't. Oh, and neither do the Chicago Bears. You know, there was a time when people seriously wanted to bring up the idea, this notion that Mitchell Trubisky was the future of the NFC North. Maybe even the present of the NFC North. And then this season happened. Then on a weekly basis, everybody was reminded that Mitchell Trubisky was the guy that Chicago traded up to get when they could have had Patrick Mahomes or Deshaun Watson. And then to make matters worse, there's that quote from Watson that got a lot of run yesterday. Back in 2017, before the draft, Watson was on the NFL Network, and he talked about the upcoming draft and what he would say to somebody who liked Trubisky more than him.
Hey, man, you're going to have to live with the consequences that come with it. You know, that's how I see it. You know, I try to stay in my own lane and try not to, you know, take that path. And, you know, I respect Mitch and what he's done and all the hype he's getting. But at the same time, you know, all my results speaks for itself. And, you know, I feel like I've accomplished a lot, accomplished everything that I could. And, you know, it just, I guess if that's who they're going to roll with, then, hey, so be it.
Damn, that is something else, isn't it? He said that before the draft. Yeah, well, the Bears are living with the consequences, and they are ugly. And if you needed any further evidence that Mitchell Trubisky is not what Mitchell Trubisky honks want him to be, then check out yesterday's beatdown by the Saints. Say, clones, what do we want when we're craving protein or we need more energy? Let me start by saying this is what we don't want. We don't want bars. We don't want sugary snacks, and we do not want energy drinks. No, what we want is beef, pure and simple. So where's the beef? It's in a package of Old Trapper beef jerky. Old Trapper is not your old man's jerky. You know, shriveled, dry, tasteless. Nope. Old Trapper Beef Jerky is made from lean strips of steak and quality spices that are smoked over a real wood fire. So it's tender, it's tasty, it's not tough. And why is it so good? Because Old Trapper is a 50-year-old family business known for its relentless commitment to quality. They take smoked beef extremely seriously, and you can taste it in every single bite. Old Trapper is packed with protein, and it comes in four amazing flavors to satisfy all your cravings. Quality smoked meat at its finest that goes wherever you go, to the game, to the gym, to the beach, wherever. So look for Old Trapper in the Clearview bag. You can see the quality you're buying. Look for it in major retail stores near you. If you don't see it, ask for it by name, because no other jerky compares. I'm talking about Old Trapper. What's your beef? Ross Tucker, NFL. He joins us once again. Ross, what's going on? How are you?
Jim, fantastic, man. Thanks for having me again.
Ross, always good to have you. I always look forward to it. Let me start with last night's game, Ross. You know Philadelphia as well as anybody. Let me get your thoughts on what happened there. Doug Peterson had called a shot earlier in the week, which personally I've got no problem with. Ross, I wish more guys did it. But having said what he said, having said that he was going to win that game, they were going to win that game, what do you make of the way they showed up last night against Dallas?
Well, it's a bad look either way, right? I mean, you know, growing up outside of Philly, and you know I did the Eagles preseason games on TV, and I do their pregame for the Eagles radio network, and it is by far the most important game to Eagles fans, by far. Not only that, I mean, they were tied atop the NFC East, so division supremacy on the line, by far the biggest rivalry, and Jim, they were coming off of a very disappointing game in Minnesota where they lost by double digits to the Vikings and really weren't in the game. So there were high expectations going into last night. I think Doug Peterson and what he said, I think the fans loved it too, and they were expecting the Eagles to come out and play with a lot more fight than they did. Very disappointing. You know, it just got off to such a bad start. I mean, you fumble on your first two series, and you're down 14-0. Do you realize, Jim, out of their seven games this year, six of them, they've been down at least 10-0 to start the game. They've spotted the other team at least 10 points in six of their seven games, and it's just hard to win that way, especially with the injuries they've had, but it's really hard to win that way.
Ross Tucker joining us. Yeah, that's living badly. That's not going to work. Let me move on to something else. Lamar Jackson, Ross, had a huge day, and the Ravens going to Seattle, they take care of their business. Let me ask you about that 4th-and-2 where he took it for 8 yards and a score. How impressed have you been, not just what he does on the field, but with the respect and leadership role that he's already earned in that locker room at such a young age?
Well, I love it. I looked it up because I'm actually writing my story for The Athletic this week about Lamar and really about the fact that the Ravens are the first team to really try to crack the NFL code when it comes to the quarterback run game. Because every week, Jim, I do a college football game for CBS Sports Network, and it's unbelievable when you talk to these college defensive coordinators and how big their eyes get when they talk about the quarterback run game. It is so hard to defend the quarterback run game, whether it's the RPO stuff or quarterback power, quarterback counter. And I think the Ravens, this is almost like an experiment, Jim. They're the first team that has kind of thrown caution to the wind, and they're just going with it. I mean, he's got 14, 19, and 14 carries the last 3 weeks. And I think most people probably have my initial reaction, which is, man, I don't know if he can last all year. I think the Ravens have decided, you know what, let's find out. They have RG3 as a backup. They have Trace McSorley as a backup. And I think they've decided we are going to zig when everybody else is zagging. Nobody else out there is really having the quarterback run game. I mean, I have college defensive coordinators say that it's the great equalizer. I mean, it is nasty. And the Ravens are using it to their advantage. And I think that's why he's such a good leader. I think all the offensive linemen and the defensive players, they see that more than any other quarterback out there, he's putting his you-know-what on the line. I mean, he is taking some physical punishment, probably more than you'd like, but he is putting his body on the line over and over again, And nothing gets the guys behind you more than that. Doesn't matter what you say. It matters what you do. And they see what he does every time he carries the football.
Ross Tucker is joining us. All right, Ross, to that point, and because I was off on Friday, you're the first one I've been able to ask this question of. When you talk about a guy maybe taking more abuse and putting himself out there more than you'd like to see, you've had a few days to think about this, but take me back to Thursday night. What went through your head when you saw Patrick Mahomes go down the way he did?
Just a shame, just because he's so entertaining. He's so fun to watch. And I've had a bunch of bad injuries, but I got to tell you, man, if my kneecap wasn't supposed to be, that would freak me out, man. I mean, if your kneecap's not like where your kneecap's supposed to be. So I just think it's such a bummer for the entire NFL. But I have kind of a different take, I guess, on this than a lot of people. Based on everything I've read, and I've read a lot, Dr. David Chow does a nice job, you know, the former Chargers team orthopedic. There's no way I would play Patrick Mahomes again this year if I owned the Kansas City Chiefs. I mean, they say maybe 3 to 5 weeks with a brace on. That brace is on there then to try to keep the kneecap in place. You're just delaying the inevitable of surgery till after the season. And I just look at it, by the time he comes back in 3 to 5 weeks, and maybe they can wait till then to make the decision, what's their record even going to be? And what's the upside? I mean, in other words, Jim, I think it's unlikely that the Chiefs will be able to secure the number one or number two seed with Mahomes out. Let's just say he's out for the next 4 games. Okay. So then do you think, what's the pros of having Patrick Mahomes out there when you'd have to win 3 playoff games, including 2 on the road, with a knee brace on, not able to be as mobile? And by the way, those 2 on the road are probably like at Baltimore or at Houston and at New England. I just think it's really Super Bowl or bust for the Chiefs, and I think the Super Bowl is very unlikely if Patrick Mahomes misses the next month. So I wouldn't want to take the risk of reoccurrence, the risk of further damage, and I would want him to have that surgery as soon as possible, because I want this guy to be the face of my franchise for the next 15 years. I'm just telling you, I think most sophisticated businesses, Jim, would not put him back out there this year. They would have the surgery, and they would get him ready for 2020, because if you do a cost-benefit analysis, I just don't think it adds up.
I don't think what you're saying is unreasonable either. I mean, given what he means to this team and what his future could look like, if I own that team, I would take a long, long look at that too. Ross, now Twitter, Ross, is a really interesting place, and there might not have been a better exchange on Twitter than the one that took place in your mentions after you tweeted about Tennessee head coach Jeremy Pruitt freaking out about that quarterback sneak on the goal line against Bama. Richard Seymour responded, quote, "Pruitt was out of line to grab the QB's face mask and hold court," end quote. Then somebody with the account Wendy the Vols fan responded to Seymour, quote, "You're ridiculous. He barely touched his face mask. You're what's wrong with football these days. Watch flag football if you don't like it," end quote. What did you make of that exchange, Ross?
It's amazing, because Seymour is the best defensive lineman I ever played against. I don't think he gets enough credit because he played in the Patriots 3-4. Not only that, Jim, he was mean. Like, you can find the gif out there of him punching Roethlisberger in the face. One time he punched me in the face, and I think the coaches wanted me to continue it because it would have been a lot more beneficial if we both got kicked out to us than it would have been
That's
to the
great.
Patriots.
That's awesome.
If I was able to get him kicked out of the game. It's hilarious. She obviously had no idea, but the guy should be an NFL Hall of Famer, and he was nasty and mean, and she's telling him he's what's wrong with football these days, and he should go watch flag football. Oh, that was amazing. So, there's nobody that's as delusional as college football fans. It is unbelievable. Like, there's diehard NFL fans, and they can be cultish, but college fans take it to a whole other level. It's amazing.
Hey, so bottom line this, Ross, where do you come out on a head coach in college grabbing a player by the face mask?
Not a fan of it at all. Not a fan of it at all. And really, for a different reason, I think, than other people. I don't think if you're a coach, you really ever need to put your hands on one of your players. and he just tugged it a little bit. But it makes you wonder, if he does that in front of everybody, what's he willing to do behind closed doors when he's not on national TV? And I got to tell you, I mean, he did that to a quarterback, and I probably wouldn't do anything. But, you know, you're in the heat of the moment. Somebody pulled my face mask. I don't know. I'd like to think I wouldn't have done anything to the coach, but gosh, when you're in a hot situation like that, a heated situation, I don't know if I don't push him off of me or hit him or something.
Sure. How do you know? Ross Tucker, my guest. Listen, really quickly, Ross, every time you're on, you and I talk about My Front Page. What is the latest? How are things going there?
It's going awesome because this is anniversary season. I had no idea how many people get married during football season, which is, by the way, highly questionable, but you can make up for it by getting your wife or whoever the best gift they'll ever have, myfrontpagestory.com. Jim and I have talked about it before. By far the best gift. Just trust me. Check it out, myfrontpagestory.com.
My man, Ross Tucker, 7 years in the NFL, host of the Ross Tucker Football Podcast, co-host of Home and Home. Follow him at Ross Tucker NFL. Great job, Ross. Thanks so much.
Absolutely. See you, Jim.
I want to talk more about Chicago. Remember when everybody was talking about Trubisky and how he was the future of that division, if not only the future of that division, but the present of that division? Trubisky was the guy. Remember, Trubisky was the guy Chicago traded up to get when they could have had Patrick Mahomes. They could have had Deshaun Watson. And I want to go back to something else I said in hour number one. To make matters even worse, there was that quote from Watson. The quote. It got a lot of run yesterday. Back in 2017. Just let me reset that really quickly, Alvin. Before the draft, he was on NFL Network, and the question came up, like it always does, you know, this quarterback or that quarterback. Somebody put it to him directly. What do you make, Deshaun, of people who are saying that they like Trubisky more than they like you?
Hey, man, you're going to have to live with the consequences that come with it. You know, that's how I see it. You know, I try to stay in my own lane and try not to, you know, take that path. And, you know, I respect Mitch and what he's done and all the hype he's getting, but at the same time, you know, all my results speak for itself. And, you know, I feel like I've accomplished a lot, accomplished everything that I could. And, you know, it just, I guess if that's who they're going to roll with, then, hey, so be it.
What a great response. It's a great response because he could have said that yesterday and it would have made sense. But he said it before the draft. Like, you know, I stay in my own lane. You're not going to drag me into this. But, hey, listen, if you make that decision, you're going to have to live with the consequences. Well, the Bears are living with the consequences, and they are ugly. Ugly. Like, if you needed any further evidence that Mitchell Trubisky is not what Mitchell Trubisky and all his supporters want him to be, just check out that beatdown yesterday by the Saints. Now, there are a couple of ways to look at that, right? Number one, the Saints had won 5 straight without Drew Brees. Teddy Bridgewater is exactly who you want him to be, exactly who you thought he was going to be when you brought him in and you kept him. Number two, Sean Payton is who you thought he'd be. Sean Payton is doing arguably the best coaching job of his career. He's doing a great job. And then the other side of that is the Bears are, in fact, a complete disaster offensively. I mean, where to even start? There were the overthrows. There was all the confusion. I don't think I need to be some sort of quarterback guru myself to know that Trubisky's mechanics are shot. They're a nightmare. I mean, I could say that Trubisky was coming off injury and that he looked rusty. But then again, when has he ever looked great? Not only has he not gotten better this year, he's actually gotten worse. He hasn't taken a step forward. He's taken about 5 steps back and then been strip sacked. I mean, again, yes, he's coming off injury. But does anyone anywhere really believe that's why he looked the way he looked yesterday? And if he wasn't ready, don't blame him. Or I should say, if he wasn't ready, don't play him. What's he doing out there? I got bad news for you, Bears fan. The guy was ready. That's why they ran him out there, because he was ready. The bad news is, this is just who this guy is. It's not that he wasn't ready. It's not that he was rusty. This is who this guy is. This offense, with the alleged future of the division at quarterback, and the alleged mastermind and genius, Matt Nagy, running the show, has not cracked 300 yards this season. They haven't gotten over 300 yards of offense in a game this year. Are you kidding me about that? But then again, when you watch them, you can see why, right? Nothing works. Everything right now is terrible. The whole is worse than the sum of the parts. They couldn't pass. They couldn't run. Even worse, even with Mitch Trubisky under center, they don't even try to run. One thing not to run it, another to not even try. 7 rushes for 17 yards for the game. The fewest rushing attempts in Bears history. And Trubisky getting booed at home. The best description of the Bears offense against the Saints actually came from a former Saints coach of yesteryear.
We couldn't do diddly poo offensively. We couldn't make a first down. We couldn't run the ball. We didn't try to run the ball. We couldn't complete a pass. We sucked. The second half, we sucked. We couldn't stop the run. Every time they got the ball, they went down and got points. We got our ass totally kicked in the second half. That's what it boiled down to. It was a horse performance in the second half. Horse. I'm totally embarrassed and totally ashamed. Coaching did a horrible job. The players did a horrible job. We got our ass kicked in that second half. It sucked. It stunk.
That's amazing. That's absolutely incredible. Matt Nagy did not say that yesterday, but would anybody have blamed him if he did? It would have applied. Not only is he not the best quarterback in that division, he's the worst, Trubisky. He might not even be the best fit on his own roster for that offense. And while the defense has not been lights out the last 2 weeks, you know, and the defense has not been lights out. The defense has not been what it was. Despite that, you know these guys are going to start getting pissed about the offense not being able to do its job. How could they not? Meanwhile, 2 other guys in that division who Trubisky was allegedly going to blow right past, Kirk Cousins and Aaron Rodgers, are putting up numbers. Cousins, with his 3rd straight week of more than 300 yards and a 70% completion rate. This time, he goes for 337 yards, 4 TDs, no picks. But you want to talk about a complete turnaround. As I mentioned, all of a sudden the Vikings offense, he's playing better than the Vikings defense. It's a miracle when you consider all the heat that was coming down on Cousins only a few weeks back. So if you're going to kill Cousins when he's not getting it done, then we all have to give him credit when he does. And right now he is.
You like that?
I do like that, Kirk. He's playing much better. And he had to. And he is. Then you have Aaron Rodgers. Man, such a good song. Why don't you just bump that in your car? Man, put the top down, put the windows down, let it rip. He goes for 429 yards, 5 TDs passing, and another rushing. And now squarely right in the middle of the MVP debate. Yeah, I understand that's a pretty ridiculous debate to have in October, but here we are.
Here we are.
Here the bleep we are. I guess Aaron Rodgers doesn't really, quote, hate Matt LaFleur. Or if he does, he's got a really funny way of showing it, right? By going out and throwing a perfect game. Things could not be going much better for the Packers. But they're going to go better because they're going to get guys healthy. They'll go better even when they get Davante Adams, when they get him back. I mean, all that talk about how their season could skid off the tracks altogether while he's gone, that's not happening. Even the guys outside yesterday were not 100%. They were on so-called pitch counts. And Aaron Rodgers still is unstoppable. So it's time to bury a couple of allegedly universally held beliefs about that division. One, that Rodgers and LaFleur will not be able to coexist. They can. 2, the future of the NFC North is Mitch Trubisky and the Bears about to take over. 2 of the biggest lies ever. Hey, Bears fan, you're going to have to wear that. You're going to have to wear Ryan Pace's mistake of taking Mitch for years. It's pretty funny. I was not in on Friday to comment about that, but who else pops up when you think about horrible quarterback evaluators? Think about this. Who else pops up when you think about horrible quarterback evaluators? Pace made that pick, and now you Bears fans are going to have to wear that for years. Incredibly, the other guy is one of the most amazing quarterbacks ever, John Elway. Since I was not here on Friday, let me quickly say this. After Thursday's game against Joe Flacco, or with Flacco against KC, there is a hot topic on the table in Denver once again. Hey now, We all love to refresh our snack drawers, isn't that so? That's a given. But when was the last time you refreshed your sock drawer? If you can't remember, it's probably time for an upgrade. Bombas socks are made with comfort innovations such as arch support, a seamless toe, and a cushioned footbed. All socks speak for incredibly comfortable. And they come in hundreds of colors and styles, making them perfect for men, women, and kids. I absolutely love these socks. They are so comfortable. And I love the mission behind the company. Bombas has a brand new line of merino wool socks that are made from soft, warm, and naturally moisture-wicking merino wool, designed with all of Bombas's classic comfort features. From keeping cool and dry on your morning run to staying comfortable in your office's freezing air conditioning, Bombas's socks are ready to work as hard as you do. And for every pair that you buy, Bombas will donate a pair to somebody in need. So buy your Bombas at bombas.com/Rome right now. Do it and get 20% off your first purchase. That's BOMBAS.com/Rome and get 20% off. Bombas.com/Rome. BOMBAS.com/Rome. Jordan Hicks is my guest. Jordan, great to have you on. How are you?
Doing great. How's it going? Appreciate you having me.
It's good to have you back, Jordan. Great to have you. So knowing how tough it is to win any game in that league, Jordan, let alone on the road, how good did it feel to go to the East Coast, get that win over the Giants, and then how good was that flight home?
Yeah, felt great. You know, this team is we've battled through a lot. We've had, you know, within the first 7 weeks, we've had quite a bit of adversity. And it felt good. You know, those are long flights home. If you don't pull out the win. So felt great, you know, obviously good to play the way we did, you know, defensively, offensively, and just as a collective.
You know, defensively, I thought the entire defense had a monster game. So what was the mindset, the approach of the defense going into yesterday's game specifically?
Yeah, well, we knew Saquon was coming back. We knew that they were going to try to utilize him in just about every which way. And Ingram as well, you know, they've been huge targets for that offense. And you know, really the game plan to go was to go in there and stop those guys and let our pass rush go to work. And, you know, Chandler Jones, our whole D-line had an awesome day, really just going to work on their offensive line and get to the quarterback. So made a huge difference in the game.
We're talking to Jordan Hicks. You mentioned Chandler Jones. He had 4 sacks on the day. And then after the day, the game, Terrell Suggs said Jones is, quote, a pass rush assassin, like the Kobe Bryant of pass rushing. I just told Jordan, I was like, I have never seen nothing like that in my life. That was a sensational game. Jordan, you know as well as I do that T-Sizzle does not say things like that. That's really high praise. What do you make of the way Jones showed up yesterday in the game he had?
Absolutely, man. He's you know, I think he's one of the most underrated pass rushers in the game right now. You know, his numbers speak for themselves. And you watch the film, and he's constantly, over and over again, you know, if he's not getting the stat, he's being disruptive in the backfield. So, you know, he's huge for us. I love playing behind him. You know, it obviously makes my job quite a bit easier. You know, and it forces turnovers. It forces offenses to have to account for them, you know, keep running backs in to chip them, keep tight ends in to chip them. You know, you started seeing that quite a bit. And you know, if you leave him one-on-one, it's what he is. He's the assassin. So he'll get after you.
Arizona's won 3 straight. Jordan Hicks joining us for a few more moments. Jordan, how different does that defense feel with Patrick Peterson out on the field?
Yeah, you know, his presence as a leader, his presence is, and, you know, just having confidence, knowing that wherever he's at, wherever he's lined up, that the job's going to get done, you know, that he's going to lock up a side, it makes a huge difference. And really, really for our whole team, you know, just the amount of, again, leadership and confidence that he brings back to the locker room. You can just hear it. He's excited to be back. We're excited to have him. And obviously he showed up just the way he always does. This yesterday. So glad to have him back. I think he's going to be huge for us moving forward.
I'm glad you mentioned leadership, because this is a team that was coming off a really tough season last year, and you had some decisions to make about where you wanted to be. You were coming from an organization in Philadelphia that had a lot of success. So in some ways, did you feel maybe your role was more than just coming to Arizona and playing well? Like, have you taken the approach that showing guys how to win is also a part of your job?
Absolutely. You know, I think I was a part of, a unique situation there in Philly. You know, we had missed it. It kind of is eerily similar to where we're at right now. You know, a brand new head coach, a brand new quarterback, young, talented quarterback, new defensive scheme. Everything's kind of up in the air. You're trying to find your identity. And then, you know, we started hitting our stride. And we, you know, our first year we lost a lot of close games. But then that second year we won the Super Bowl. So, you know, you see a lot of similarities in where we're at and, you know, just the maturation of this team. And, you know, that's kind of, you know, the focus. It's a process. We're figuring this thing out together, how we play together. And you can see it. You can see the difference between week one and yesterday, just how we can finish a game, how we can start fast, how we can play together. And get a real team win. So yeah, leadership wise, man, I've seen it before. I've lived it. You know, and the things that we did well over there, I try to bring over here and instill. So absolutely.
Jordan Hicks, my guest. Before you go, you mentioned your young quarterback. Look, you've been around the league for a few years now. You know how tough this league is, especially for a rookie quarterback. So what do you make of how Kyler Murray has dealt with it so far and responded to that challenge?
Yeah, man, he's unbelievable just in his approach and the way he carries himself and his confidence. You know, you can see it on his face after every single drive, whether it's a touchdown or not. You know, he's cool, calm, and collected, you know, and no moment is really too big for him at all. You know, he really just plays with that swagger. His ability to throw the ball. You know, I got questions early on in training camp asking if, you know, he could sit in the pocket and throw the ball. And I was telling everybody, you know, don't worry, this kid he's got every attribute you want. And, you know, it's been shown. He's got the ability to escape, you know, and everything you want in a quarterback. So, you know, he's going to continue to mature, and things will start slowing down, and it's only going to get better from there.
I think, Jordan, finally, the fans see a lot of what goes on Sunday. They don't see what goes on during the week, and they certainly don't see what goes on off the field. What about the arrival of your second baby boy? What's that been like for you and your family?
Yeah, man. Huge blessings over here, man. It's been fun. You know, second time around is actually a lot easier than the first time around, I'll tell you that. I know how to do a lot more comfortable. So wife is a trooper. She's been grinding. And it's been awesome, man. You know, we kept it a surprise. Didn't know if I was going to have a boy or a girl. Came out a baby boy, so you can imagine how I felt.
That's awesome. Good for you. He's a Super Bowl champ. Yep. Arizona 3-3-1 on the season. They're at New Orleans on Sunday. That is a CBS game. Jordan Hicks, my guest. Jordan, it's great to have you back. I appreciate you. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Jim.
You got it. Jordan Hicks. Nats, Astros tomorrow night. And again, that's a matchup that nobody saw coming. Since the last time I was on the air, the Astros had taken a 3-1 series lead after winning Game 4 in New York. Then they lost Game 5. Then they went back home for Game 6. Then they started Game 6 by jumping all over the Yanks with this in the first inning.
There goes Altuve, first pitch, and Gurriel lines it down the left field line and deep, and that ball is gone! And it'll end Rich Crawford boxes. A 3-run home run for Yuli Gurriel. And the Astros jump out to a 3-0 lead.
Astros Radio Network, 3-0 in the first inning. That joint was peaking. At that point, you were not expecting a game, but rather a coronation and a party. I mean, there's no way you come back from that. The Yankees would just fold. The Astros would run away with it, and they'd be popping champagne in a matter of hours. Except that's not what happened. Because the Yankees did not go away. They wouldn't go away. They made it 3-1 in the second, 3-2 in the fourth. Then Houston goes to work on defense. There was this from Josh Reddick defensively in the sixth.
And that's lifted into right. Reddick hustling in, and he makes the headlong diving grab. A big second out as the runners have to retreat.
Then Houston made a 4-2 in the bottom of the sixth. And then Michael Brantley did what Michael Brantley does. He came up huge defensively as well in the field.
Here's the pitch, and it's in on the fist. A shallow fly ball to left field. Brantley comes in, and he made the catch on the dive. Throw to first. Got it! Double play! The play of the series by Michael Brantley.
Unbelievable play. So Houston was showing you everything. The bats, the gloves, 4-2 lead in the ninth. Now it really was over. Now it's over. Now they're three outs away from the party. Except they weren't, because with one on and one out, DJ LeMahieu came to the plate.
Swung on, a high fly to right. Back goes Springer on the stands. He leaps, and it's gone. It's a two-run game-tying home run for DJ LeMahieu. A fly ball to right just over the leap of Springer into the right field seats. What a dramatic two-run home run.
Yankees radio, shocking actually, tie game. Not only a tie game, but honestly, it felt like the Yankees were going to win at that point. I say that because they ripped the momentum, they sucked the air out of that building, and they were sending Aroldis Chapman to the mound in the ninth to force the extra innings. And Chapman did what he does. He set down the first two batters with a strikeout and a pop-up, and then he worked ahead of George Springer 0-1. But then he lost him, throwing four straight balls, and he walked him, which is the last thing you want to do, especially with two outs, especially given who was in the on-deck circle. Because up walks Jose freaking Altuve. Obviously, there are a lot of guys that you do not want to see in the bottom of the ninth of an elimination game in the LCS. But Jose Altuve is right near the top of the list, if not at the top of the list. Ask LeMahieu. He said, quote, "To be honest, I never feel good when we're on defense and he comes to the plate. But it's not just us. The Yankees. I think every team feels like that." End quote. Right. And for very good reason. Because on an 0-2, or I should say a 2-1 pitch, Altuve did this.
And that's driven deep to left center field. Garner is going back. Looking up. See you later. See you later. Astros headed back to the World Series. Jose Altuve, a walk-off two-run homer. And the Astros beat the Yankees 6-4. Win the ALCS 4-2.
Freaking wear that. Man, wear that. And I don't mean for a night or a week or, I mean forever. Ball game, series, Yankee season, thanks for coming. What an absolute legend. The guy who embodies the Houston Astros doing exactly what you'd expect him to do in that situation. Doing exactly what most thought that he would do in that situation. Which raises the question, if everybody knew that that was going to be the result, if you pitched to that guy in that situation, why the hell would you ever pitch to that guy in that situation? Especially with two outs, and especially with a defensive replacement, Jake Marisnyk, in the on-deck circle. Alvin, do me a favor, have that home run ready again. Because even crazier than pitching to Altuve in that situation was Altuve himself looking for a 2-1 slider in that situation. And that's the spot where Chapman generally goes fastball. And by that, I mean three times out of four, he goes fastball. Yet for some reason, Altuve was looking for a slider, and he found it. Not only did he find it, he found it out over the plate, and then he got rid of it once he found it.
And that's driven deep to left center field. Garner is going back. Looking up. See you later. See you later. See you later. Astros headed back to the World Series. Jose Altuve, a walk-off two-run homer. And the Astros beat the Yankees 6-4. Win the ALCS 4-2.
The only thing shocking about that is that it was not shocking at all. How the hell do you pitch to that guy? That's not even hindsight being 2020. How do you pitch to that guy? How do you pitch to that guy in that situation with a defensive replacement on deck? AJ Hinch, the unbelievable manager of the Astros, said that what Altuve does is not easy, even if he makes it look so.
It's not easy to deliver the way he does. You know, the playoff version of him is spectacular. You know, we talk about his division series homers and then his, you know, attention to detail in every facet of the game. He's turned himself into a, you know, a star in his career here, and yet he's remained humble. He's remained hungry. He's driven. He's engaging with his teammates. You know, it's the same old quote of everything that's right about the Astros is Jose Altuve. He's been here the longest and has seen a lot and seen this organization grow from the ground up. I'm so proud of him. I'm so fortunate to be his manager.
That is so good to hear that. Those are great, great statements from A.J. Hinch. Quote, I'm so fortunate to be his manager. Also, listen to that other part once again. Quote, everything that's right about the Astros is Jose Altuve. That's about as big a compliment as you could pay somebody, especially when you consider you're saying that about a guy who's on a team that's loaded with Hall of Famers and All-Stars, and they're all pointing to Altuve as the man. And now you've got to be ready to face the Nationals. But not without one final remark for the Yankees. Carlos Correa said this.
It was an unbelievable series. We enjoyed every moment of it. We knew we had a great team out there on the Yankees. Obviously, they call themselves the Savages, and they are Savages. They're really good. But in this jungle called the American League, we are the apex predators out there.
Wait, what? That is so good. He said the Yankees call themselves the Savages, which is fine. They are. They're really good. But, quote, in this jungle called the American League, we're the apex predator.
We are the apex predators out there.
Carlos Correa. That is so good. I said it myself. He said it better. I said on Twitter, the Astros are the real savages. He said, no, it's fine. The Yankees are savages, except us. Oh, we are the apex predator.
We are the apex predators out there.
And now the apex predator gets the Washington Nationals. Let's get it on. I'm going to take the Astros. I'm going to take the Astros, but I say that with respect. I'm going to take the Astros because, to me, they are the apex predator. I just don't think that it's the runaway beatdown that most people are predicting. Got a lot of respect for the Nats. Their rotation, how they're playing right now, a lot of respect. Just not enough to say that they're going to win this series because I don't see it happening. I don't see anybody beating the Astros. The Nats or anybody else, they are the apex predators. That Altuve moment, while not surprising, still was absolutely amazing. Elton Brand is my guest. Elton, great to have you back. How are you?
Hey, Jim, good to be back. You can send your email if you want. I'll wait, man. You know me.
No, man, it's not worth it. It was not that good of an email, but I appreciate you saying so. All right, so we're just over 48 hours away from the start of the season. How are you feeling right now? For instance, would you like a little more time to get ready for the year, or are you excited and ready to turn this team loose and let it rip?
No, we're excited. We're excited. Preseason, it's like it becomes a drag on everyone, playing against each other over and over again, and then, you know, going out there and the games don't count. So we're chomping at the bit to get out there. We're excited, especially against a great rivalry like we have with Boston.
We're talking Elton Brand. So last month, your coach, Brett Brown, said, quote, we've had back-to-back 50-win teams. We have a 25-year-old All-Star. We have a 23-year-old All-Star. We have the best team I've had this year. We have the deepest bench. We have vets. We have men. We've got pieces. Elton Brand has done a hell of a job, end quote. So it's really a hell of a comment right there. You know the expectations are out there for the team. So as an organization, how are you dealing with them? Do you try to ignore them, or do you take them on and say, listen, anything less than our best is going to be a failure?
We embrace it. We embrace the expectations, from our great managing partners, Josh Harris, Dave Blitzer. They did a great job giving me the keys to put this team together this summer. Brett Brown's been a great partner with all this, but we embrace the pressure. We know what the expectations are, and we look forward to it. Like, we don't want to be in the middle. We want to be in that championship talk season after season. We want to put together a winning team season after season. That's my goal.
76ers general manager Elton Brand is my guest. So when you made the move to add Al Horford, I'm guessing you had a pretty good understanding of what he was going to bring to the team. But now that you've seen him in action with everybody else, how excited are you about how he fits in with this group?
Proven veteran, proven winner. 11 playoff appearances in 12 seasons, five-time All-Star. Just what he consummate professional. What he gives us, on the court, because he can play, he can spread the floor, versatility and defense. And we know the teams we're going to have to face if we want to try to get out the East. He gives us just that much off the court also with, talking to, our younger players, his relationship with Joel, and just being a consummate professional. So it's been great actually having him in the building. It looked kind of weird at first, seeing him in a Sixers uniform, but
sure,
I got used to it.
We're talking Elton Brand. That makes sense. Speaking of Joel Embiid's coming off a year where he averaged 28 points, 14 rebounds, 4 assists, couple of blocks, a legitimate MVP candidate and Defensive Player of the Year candidate, and he's really only entering his third full season in the league. So to you, what does the next step in his growth look like?
you know, losing Game 7 the way we did has really propelled him to, and all of us, you know, to work hard to get that quest of a championship. So next step for him is to continue to grow, take it as he's taken it this summer, with his health, with everything else. So he's focused and locked in, and just continue on that kind of path to just stay steady and be there every day for all the little things he needs to do for, you know, his rehab, or, you know, getting his extra shots up. And, you know, he's been working at it this summer. So I'm very proud of him and where he's at right now. Played in all the preseason games, and he's ready to go.
We're talking to 76ers GM Elton Brand once again. You know, you've got so much offensive talent on that roster, but if you had to describe the identity of the team, is it about what you can do on offense, or maybe is it about how you can dominate teams defensively?
Our goal, defensive, you know, defensive toughness, you know, the versatility, we spoke to that, but, you know, our size, length, athleticism, and team building and watching the playoffs, you know, rebounding, look, the small things when the game slows down is what really hurt us in the playoffs last year. And as good as we were close, but we didn't make it there. So we're going to hang our hat on defense this year.
You know, it seemed like it. I mean, to that point, you traded up to select Matisse Thybulle in the draft. People who watched him in Washington knew how good he was defensively, but then he shows up in camp and Brett Brown is raving about him. Ben Simmons is laughing and saying things like, man, I hate him on defense, I hate him. How pleased have you been with the way the rookie has shown up so far?
I've been very pleased. You know, we had a blue and white scrimmage. It's basically, you know, you split the teams up, and he got a standing ovation from the fans for deflections, which I've never saw in my, you know, 20-year career
right.
being around the NBA. So he's been spectacular. He's hitting shots, but his defense, he gets his hands on balls all the time, deflection-wise, and he should see some real NBA minutes this year. So I'm excited about where he is in his progress.
Manel, what does that exactly mean? How much of that is that just God-given ability, and how much of that is want to, desire, just the choice you make?
Yeah, it's a mix. You know, it's almost like he baits players to throw his way, and you know, it's akin to an interception, I guess. Like, it's uncanny. His size, his athleticism, his quickness, his length, and just his motor, but also he's intuitive, like how to get these steals, how to get these deflections, how to get these blocks, but he doesn't quit.
Sounds like our guy Dennis Rodman, doesn't it? Like, I'm not making that comparison per se, but like the way you lay that out, that sounds like what we used to say about Dennis Rodman, right?
Oh, for sure. Like, we knew when Dennis, he just had a total feel for the game. Like, he knew where an offensive rebound would bounce. You know, he just had that kind of feel. Of course, we're not comparing him to, you know, one of the greatest forwards in, you know, NBA history, but he does have a great feel for the game defensively, for sure.
We're talking Elton Brand. I get that. Listen, one thing about Brett Brown, you know, he's so great to talk to because he's got this colorful language when he uses phrases like bomb squad, wrecking ball, when he wants to describe the second unit. James Ennis talks about being a bunch of bulldogs. How would you describe, and I'll get back to Brown, but how would you describe that second unit, and what kind of an impact do you want to see from them when they come in?
You know, that was something I had to definitely strengthen up, you know, in the playoffs last year. Just get the bench a lot stronger. We have a lot more depth. Mike Scott coming back. James Ennis wanted to be back. We talked about Matisse Thybulle. Kylo Quinn has been great. He had 9 assists in a preseason game at a center. Furkan, and the list goes on. So I'm really excited about having this group back, and players that know the system already, and I think we're going to do very well off that bench with that second unit.
All right, so Brown, like he's got that vernacular. He's got a way of looking at things and a way of talking about things. When he's talking about things like the wrecking ball and the guys so-and-so gnashes, or this guy is in the honey spot, what's it like to work with him, and can you always follow what he's saying when he's talking about guys gnashing and going to the Malone line?
Yeah, the Malone spot and all. There's like a 76ers Airy. 76ers Dictionary is what they have.
Right.
And his vernacular and all these, you know, terms from, I don't know where he gets it from, Maine or somewhere, but it draws you close. You know, once in a blue, it's a word, you're like, what is the Malone slot? What is the Nash step? What is the Virgil? And, you know, all these terms from old NBA games and old NBA teams, or the Maggette cut even, you know, things like that. But it's colorful, but it draws you to him. You know, and he's been a great coach for us. I'm glad he's at the helm and the leader on that court for us.
Elton Brand's my guest. Before you go, you know, there's so much talk outside the team about Ben Simmons and his shooting. It seems like people get so worked up every time the guy makes a shot or misses a shot, and they're always losing their mind whether he makes or misses. What would you say to everybody who does that, and how does he look to you right now?
He looks great. You know, he's already been an all-star. You know, he's already rookie of the year, and he's working on a shot. We believe in him. We want him to shoot it when he's open, but, you know, he has so many spectacular parts of his game from his defense. Could be one of, you know, make an all-defensive team. We know his passing. We know his size. You know his athleticism. And his willingness to shoot is only going to make his game better. So I'm looking forward to see him continue to work on it, and we're going to give him those opportunities. But we're not going to hurt the team in any way for that. Like, that's him. He wants to make the best basketball play possible out there.
Elton, finally, you know, when I take a step back, whenever I talk to former assistant coaches who ultimately become head coaches, they always talk about what it's like to move that one chair over and what a difference it is to make that move to one chair over. You said that when you were coming up, you could make that recommendation, but now you're making the call, right? So from our conversations over the years, from when you played and even after you retired, I knew you'd be up to the challenge, but how different does it feel making a recommendation versus being the guy who's got to make that call?
It's a world of difference, Joe. It's like, you know, some of the recommendations I thought back, you know, from one of our conversations and just talking, like, some of the recommendations I made may not have made sense, and it's just like, whatever. Like, it was out one ear, in one ear, out the other. It didn't matter. But now you're sitting in the chair and you're receiving the recommendations to make that final call. You know, I believe in the team first and, you know, getting our goal of winning a championship, and then I think about myself last, so but it's definitely tough sitting in the big chair.
He is in the big chair, the general manager for the 76ers, entering his second season in that big chair, a 17-year NBA vet, two-time All-Star, first pick in the draft overall in 1999, and Philadelphia opens up against Boston Wednesday. Elton, I appreciate you. Always did when you played, always have since you stopped playing. You've always been accessible to us, and I do appreciate the relationship so much. Thanks, Elton.
No, my pleasure.
Good night!